movies, music, television, and more. This is
Entertainment.
Rebooted.
Only on WZIP. Hello, I'm Isabel.
Hello, and I'm Ella.
And you're listening to Entertainment Rebooted.
Whoop. So Isabel and I had the amazing idea of just talking about, you know, your typical romantic tropes and cliches and just discussing whether we like them or not, kind of giving definitions for them and just any examples in popular culture that we have. We'll get started.
Yes.
So our first one and a personal favorite of mine is enemies to lovers. So obviously this one's a little self-explanatory, but the characters start as enemies, and over time when they, you know, learn about their differences, they have to work alongside each other for whatever the reason may be, they develop into lovers. So spicy. But some examples of this would be Pride and Prejudice, Leslie and Ben from Parks and Rec, 10 Things I Hate About You for like a more recent example, I guess.
Yeah.
Personally, I really love this trope. I don't know. I just think it's very like interesting. I love like the dynamic switch. Personally, to me, like every time enemies to lovers is explored, it's always very like well written, which I love. Whereas like other tropes and cliches, as we work down the list, there's kind of, they're very wishy-washy, I guess. It's kind of
right.
Like, eh.
There's more variety in quality there.
Yes,
more
yes.
More variance in quality, perhaps. Yeah, you know, I could throw down with some enemies to lovers. I think it's definitely, it's a good trope. It's a good trope. You know, sometimes tropes are bad. You know, inherently you don't want to see something over and over again. This is one. Okay, I don't mind it.
It's one I won't really get tired of. Because, like, right. There's, like you were saying, there's just, like, so much you could explore with it.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of directions you could take it. I think it's definitely probably one of the better ones on this list.
Mm-hmm. All right, on to our next one, Forbidden Love. So this one is for, like, all my angsty lovers out there, but they're not meant to be in love for, you know, whatever reason, and the universe will make this fact known for our tragic lovebirds.
Yes.
So to me, like, the most, like, quintessential forbidden love example would be Romeo and Juliet.
Of course.
We also have The Notebook, Brokeback Mountain, and Our Notes Say Lolita, Barf, Boo, Throw Tomatoes. We'll talk about that grody movie / book later.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I wrote this part down, it's like, there's always going to be things romantically that you're not going to like, but that doesn't mean we can't talk about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's on the list here. Doesn't mean we like it.
Just the whole concept, like, just with Lolita and, I guess, that questionable age gap. It is very forbidden for good reason.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing, is there's two sides to forbidden love. The forbidden love that's just, like, with Romeo and Juliet, they're different.
It's
families.
Very tragic, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes it should be forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
There's two sides. It's like the tragic forbidden love and the,
ooh,
no, they're,
yeah,
they're right to be forbidden.
Like, go to jail forbidden love.
Right, exactly. So those are the two sides. I don't mind the like Romeo and Juliet type forbidden love.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like sometimes it's a little over dramatized, but that's fine. I think the forbidden love that's like also illegal, like, yeah, go to jail, bye.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Obviously, with the more tragic side to forbidden love, like, I really love it when it's done right. I think it's,
mm-hmm,
I live for angst, really, with any fictional characters. I just love to watch characters suffer.
You are angsty.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a little emo, I guess. But honestly, like, I just really live for the drama and the eventual pain that forbidden love may bring. I'm, like, looking directly at Romeo and Juliet with that.
Mm-hmm.
I also just really love Shakespeare, and I feel like he explores that a lot in his writing. So shout out to Shakespeare if you're listening.
Shout out Shakespeare. You wrote some good stuff.
Oh, yes.
Next, we have fake dating. This is an interesting trope. I feel like you see it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very common. It's when two people pretend to date each other for whatever reason. Maybe they're going to a wedding. They need a wedding date. You know, whatever. And then surprise, they actually do have feelings for each other by the end of the piece of media you're taking in.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one I don't mind too much. Some examples, Pretty Woman and Bridgerton. There's lots more examples out there. This one's okay. It's not as good as some of the other ones we're talking about here.
Yeah.
There's no angst in pretend dating.
No, I feel this is like your, like, entryway into romantic cliches and tropes, because, like, I feel like when I think of fake dating, I just think of, like, I don't know, like Disney Channel movies, those like really campy Netflix films.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it can be cute, but it's just like just a little too sappy for me sometimes. I'm just like,
right.
I can do without this, but
too much sweet, not enough suffering for Ella.
Exactly.
Yeah. I knew it. yeah. So there's that one. This next one, it's kind of a similar vein to fake dating, is forced proximity. So forced proximity is not necessarily that one character is forcing the other character to hang out with them, but it's sort of the situation,
yeah, circumstantial,
that they're in is forcing them together. So a good example of that is the Hunger Games movies and book series, where, you know, PETA and Katniss are thrown together in this situation, mm-hmm. and they have to spend a lot of time together. And
they could also fall under fake dating, because like they're pretending to like be married to each other,
right? So it is a similar concept, the fake dating and forced proximity. Another example of forced proximity, this one's a little like on the nose, is like Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Which, like, okay, yeah, that was definitely the Beast that forced that proximity. But, yeah, it's just, like, two people end up having to be together for a while, and then they end up liking each other. I think forced proximity works really well when you pair it with enemies to lovers.
Yes!
This is a cliche that you want to see along with other cliches. It doesn't stand well on its own.
Right. It's like the condiment, I guess.
Yeah, it's the ketchup on your hot dog.
Yeah, because, right, like, I feel like just, like, forced proximity is just kind of like, oh, like, I'm close with someone in my class, and then, like, we're dating or whatever. Like, it's just kind of, like, just kind of boring. A lot of nothing burger going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pairing it with something really works.
You got a little ketchup to that nothing burger, and then
you're
cooking
with something.
You got something yummy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's definitely, it's one of those flexible tropes you're going to see along with another trope.
Yes.
And for that, I love it. You know, we have to have those kind of tropes that don't stand on their own.
You do. Yeah, you need a good sidekick trope. And for that, yeah, I commend forced proximity for that. So, like, I'll give it a thumbs
Thank
up.
Thank you for your service.
We salute you, forced proximity. So our next one is the love triangle. So with this involves three people. Typically two people are fighting for the love of one, which is like, ooh, so dramatic.
I love that.
So like Twilight, also the Hunger Games are good examples of this, with like Gale, PETA, and Katniss, which, like, I'm going to be honest, really annoyed me in the movies, because it's just like, girl, make up your mind. Like, PETA's the one for you. Gale's just like, you know, whatever.
Gale's just there.
Yes. Yeah. I did not care for Gale. Sorry for all our Gale fans out there. Team PETA all
They'll
the way.
They'll survive.
Yeah, they will. I don't know, like, I have, like, a love-hate relationship with the love triangle. Like, I feel like this is also something that needs to be paired with something else,
exactly,
to, like, kind of just, like, spice it up a bit. Sometimes I really love the drama that the love triangle creates, but other times it just really gets on my nerves, and it creates just a lot of unneeded drama. It's just, like, especially in the case of the Hunger Games, I was just like, get over it, guys. Grow up.
Yeah. I think it definitely helps, like, if there's some forbidden love there, maybe two of the people in the love triangle aren't supposed to be a relationship, then it can kind of add to that.
Yeah.
I think the love triangle is, like, classically a teen trope.
Yeah.
Vampire Diaries and Twilight are two teen books and a show that, like, they hit this hard.
I feel like, similarly to fake dating, this is like an entryway into like all the cliches you could explore with romantic writing.
It's there, not one of my favorites, but it can add some interesting short-term drama. I think it's when you drag it out too long, it kind of loses its punch.
Yeah, you're right. Like, if this is like the sole creation of drama, then I'm like over it, but if it's done in small bursts, that's fine.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's just, like you were saying, it's just kind of there. So our next one is friends to lovers. And, like, I don't know, that's also very self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. Like, pretty much just any normal relationship ever. nothing too out
dating
there. Again, like, I'm just kind of meh on it, you know, when I'm, like, reading or, like, watching, I kind of want a little more theatrics with romance. Like, it can be cute, but
yeah,
I just want a little
drama,
more flavor in my make-believe relationships.
Right. I mean, I feel like a lot of times you're seeking media, a book, a movie, a show, because you're trying to put yourself outside of your life. So watching a very typical romance sometimes it just doesn't put you outside of your life, you know? It's like,
yeah,
basic, seen it, next. not boring. To be mean or anything. Yeah. Like,
I've lived it.
All right. This next trope, you know, I was calling the last one boring. This one may be too far. It's the amnesia trope. This one can take many forms. You know, maybe, you know, this couple, they're already married or together, and then one of them gets amnesia, and then it's about them, like, you know, reconnecting. Or maybe, like, there's a lot of different ways they could do the amnesia thing. I think it's weird. It's a little...
It
could be. Here's the thing. I don't want to blanketly say it's weird, because it could be done well. I mean, it's not impossible for the trope to be done well, but for the most part, I'm going to give it the Isabel stamp of non-approval.
Yeah, because when you first had this on, like, our little note sheet, I couldn't, like, think of anything for amnesia. Yeah. But, like, now that you explain it, it's, like, all coming to my mind now. And, like, I feel like amnesia is just, like, every, like, beginner Wattpad, like, story plot line. Like, oh, my gosh, they were in love, and now she forgets everything. Like, let's add some stakes to it. You know, let's spice things up a bit.
It's
very
bad.
Basic.
I feel like a lot of times, I mean, and the thing is, amnesia is a trope outside of the romance genre.
Yeah.
It's a trope through every genre. And generally, people look at it as lazy. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of true. It's sort of a lazy tactic for writing.
Yeah.
Just to kind of bring in drama when you don't have some. I think there are times when it's done well. It's not like blanketly lazy all of the time. There's no certainties when you're talking about tropes, because they can be used so differently. But I think this one a lot of the times is kind of just lazy.
Yeah, I like you were saying, it never really stood out to me as a trope. Like, I'm not going to, like, read or watch something because it's like amnesia trope.
Yeah, I'm not googling amnesia books. I'll be good without it, thank you.
Yeah. So our next one would be opposites attract, and this is also pretty self-explanatory, and it kind of ties into another one we'll talk about later, but, like, completely different from one another. Like, let's say one is, like, a goth girl, the other guy's the lovable jock. I think this trope's cute. I like it, especially, like, when you I think it's another one that you can pair with other things,
right?
Like, I think it can file under, like, enemies to lovers, forbidden love,
right? I think so. Like, a recent example that's coming to mind for me is Elemental, where a water person and a fire person fall in love, literally opposites. So, yeah, very easy.
The most extreme opposites ever.
Right. Very easy one to call back on to, but
I think this is just, like, a good trope, like, that you can, like, just experiment with. You know, like, it's basic. Writing, yeah. Everyone gets, like, the concept of it, so you can really take it into, like, any extreme you want it to, which is really fun.
Yeah, I think this could go to, I mean, it could be really basic and boring, or it could be really well-written and interesting. Mm-hmm. It just depends how the author, writer, whomever, how they take it.
Yeah.
This is my genre that I need to talk about. Ella did not want to include this on our list. I had to do it. Okay, it's the stalking genre of, like, romance, the stalking trope in romance. Okay, so common now, though, that we couldn't not talk about it. So
I guess.
With this, you're so unconvinced. So I'm thinking about the show You. It's on Netflix. And it is extremely popular, mm-hmm. and it is all about this guy that stalks women. And I mean, there's not a lot to explain within the trope itself. It's that, you know, one character stalks the other, and they're both, you know, there's some kind of romance happening between them. And it's interesting, because a lot of women like it. It's very popular. But it's also really dangerous to normalize,
yeah.
I guess, because, like, and this is something I've experienced myself, is, like, okay, you know, sometimes it's cute when somebody makes you a playlist, or, you know, they send you texts throughout the day that let you know they're thinking of you, but when people start, like, showing up where you are,
mm-hmm.
and, like, when it takes a step further, that's kind of scary in real life.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
It does. Like, I think that's why I just don't really care for the stalking trope, because, like, it just romanticizes something that's very dangerous, and I feel like some people who do, I guess, are like a fan of this trope just kind of let their feelings towards it kind of blindside the realities of it.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, I think it's okay sometimes if you're sort of...
If you're tasteful with it, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, so I'm again going to talk about the show You. I love the show. And I think it shows a lot of... It's not just, like, they make the guy that stalks people. It's not like they make him seem super normal and cool. He just stalks people. No, he's, like, they show that he is bad. Like, a bad person and that he does bad things. So I think they kind of do it well, but they are still playing into, like, the, ooh, he's, like, a good-looking guy that stalks women. They are still, like, playing into all of that. So it is, I don't know, I feel like it's a trope you have to acknowledge, but...
I feel like it's, like, the proceed with caution of tropes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, I don't know, when I think of people who are, like, really gung-ho about the stalking trope, I kind of, like, compare them to the people who are, like, a little too interested in true crime and, like, serial killers, just kind of just, like...
Yeah, there's definitely... I was thinking the same
like,
thing.
Like, the like, you need to, like, be cognizant of the grim reality behind this trope, behind those people.
And it's tough because, like, depending on how young you are when you start to sort of enjoy this trope, it kind of warps your view of romance. Like, if you're in middle school and you're getting really into, like, stalking romance novels, or I'm just using novels, for instance, then maybe you're thinking, like, oh, you know, like, maybe it wouldn't be so bad if a guy, like, followed me to, like, see where I live and stuff like that.
And that's not, like, something we should promote to, especially, like, young audiences.
Right. The young audiences is scary because it's, I don't know, it's, I think... I'm gonna keep referencing women in this. It's not uncommon for women to be, like, stalked. It's not, like, that rare that you hear of it. So, yeah. All that said, I have enjoyed a stalking trope thing here and there. I'm not like a huge fan of the of the trope, but I'm not gonna pretend like I didn't enjoy the show You and watch all four seasons and review them on this podcast. Like,
yeah,
I have to be honest with my roots.
I never saw the show, but I don't know. I mean, like, obviously I don't really care for the trope
I think I feel like it would not be a bad watch if you're bored one day.
Yeah.
It's
like
they
heard
don't
good things about it.
They don't romanticize it, I feel like.
Maybe one of these days.
Yeah,
I have such, like, a long shopping list of just series to watch. Because, like, I do this thing where, like, I'll watch, like, four episodes of a show and then I just, like, drop it completely.
Yeah, an easy thing to do.
Silly me. Anywho, on for our next trope. So the next one we'll be talking about is the Manic Pixie Dream Girl archetype. So essentially this is just, like, a quirky love interest who is typically a girl. Essentially they're just kind of their plot devices. They're not really characters. They just kind of exist to, like, help the male protagonist, like, achieve a goal or, like, learn a lesson, and, like, they don't get anything in return. This was, like, first coined in 2005 after a movie critic labeled Kirsten Dunst's character in Elizabeth Town as this. If you ever met someone who's like, oh, I'm not like other girls, that's, like, essentially, like, the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. A really good example of this would be Ramona Flowers from Scott Pilgrim. Like, whenever I think of a Manic Pixie Dream Girl, I think of her. She's the mother to all of them, I guess.
Okay, I have such a serious question to ask you right now, Ella. Do you ever feel like you are perceived by a man as a Manic Pixie Dream Girl? As, like, his Manic Pixie Dream Girl? Because I feel like I have experienced not even, like, dating relationships, but, like, friendships or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where I've had to be just the character that does nothing, teaches you a lesson, and then
along. Especially in my past relationship, I was very much just the quirky love interest who teaches my ex a lesson, and then I'm just like, bye.
Literally, yeah.
I don't love feeling like that. I don't feel like that anymore, though, which is nice. Yay. But, yeah, I've definitely felt like that in friendships and past relationships. My huge gripe with this trope is just, like, men just romanticize this archetype, and they just, like, expect for, like, all these just quirky girls to flock to them and then just do whatever they can to, like, you know, like, make them feel good or whatever, and then, like, they just get nothing in return. And it's like,
yeah.
And it's like, that's not how it works, friendship or relationship. Like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like, especially, like, after watching these, some of these films, like, the most, like, average and boring men ever just want, like, a quirked up girlfriend who they can just neglect. Because, like, the movie I watched did that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I definitely, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I just, to me, this is a hard trope to even pretend to, like, be interested in.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the irreparable damage it has done is unforgivable. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's been a time where it's, like, I don't want to call myself quirky. I feel like...
But,
like, if you don't have the most mainstream girl interests, then you're labeled as quirky.
Right.
And you're, like, you're part of some man's pigeonholed development. Into this.
Yeah. Like, I just don't like how men just kind of fantasize about this trope. It's gross and it's unfair to us. Because, like, especially now, like, I just always see... I just always see, like, a bunch of memes, like, oh, I want a goth girlfriend. Oh, I want a weird girlfriend. It's like, you don't deserve them, bro.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. And then, like, characterizing some women as weird and some women as quirky and some women as, like, it's just weird.
Right, like,
the whole thing is just a no.
Because, like, quirky in this sense is seen as, like, good. But, like, in, like, the same movie, they could, like, I guess, like, villainize this girl because she's weird. And it's just, like, where do we draw the line? Because, like, quirky girls and weird girls are the same thing, you know?
It's about, like, how conventionally attractive you are. I mean, yeah. There's just so many things that play into it. And
it's just, I just hate this trope. Like, I just think it's such a mean trope. And, you know, like, people just ran with it in, like, the worst direction possible. And I hate it. That's like me shooting fireballs at it.
Bye-bye, manic pixie dream girl.
You're done for. Oh, talking about another really awful trope. Age gap. This is just a dramatic age gap between lovers. Very gross, grody, freaky. So Lolita, like we were talking about, and Call Me By Your Name with Timothée Chalamet. Similar to the previous one we were talking about, this just romanticizes something that's very disgusting. You know, like, Lolita's what? 14, 16?
I think she's 12.
12? Oh, my... Oh,
that
no.
might be too young. I don't remember.
She's a kid, and the guy is, like, what, in his 40s? Like, we should not be romanticizing that.
And the thing is, so Lolita, the book, it's, like, it's not supposed to be romanticizing it. It's supposed to be, like a critique of it, but... that doesn't stop people. And, like, Lolita's, like, a whole genre now of, like...
Yeah, and...
books, anime, especially, like...
Yes.
Yeah.
Even, like, I'm seeing it, like, pop up in music. Like, I feel like Lana Del Rey really plays off of the whole, like, Lolita aesthetic concepts. Like, I just feel... like, I hate it. I don't think it's something we should be preaching to audiences, because it's... very dangerous.
This is another brain rot one.
Yeah,
where it's like, if you get to this trope too young, it'll warp your perception of how romance should, I don't know, should be is too strong, but it's like, if you're there's nothing wrong with an age gap of, like, you know, I think a 30-year-old and a 50-year-old, like, that's a 20-year age gap, but I'm not like,
but, like, they're both consenting adults by that point, you know?
Right. So I think you have to make the distinction of, like, an age gap is all right in certain terms, but most age gap stuff, it's like someone a little too, it's like 18 and 38 or, like, you know, whatever. And that's, like, too much. But, like, this is a trope that I think I ran into too soon. And I was like, oh yeah, like, it's so normal for people my age to be dating someone 40. Like, and, like, in my, you know it's not, but you start consuming this media, and it warps your perception of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't like how predatory this trope is, and I think, like, it's becoming a little too normalized in our society, and, like, we just need to, like, realize that, like, oh, we shouldn't be, like, preaching this, especially to young audiences.
Yeah, time to rein it in a little bit.
Yeah, like, take a step back, y'all. Let's reevaluate some things. Yeah, I don't. I hate that trope.
This is a sad one. This is a sad one to talk about.
Yeah, the next one's a little more fun. So we have the damsel in distress trope. So that's like, when I think of damsel in distress, I think of more like medieval romance. So like, you know, like your princess is being rescued from something perilous thanks to her knight in shining armor. This is very much like Rapunzel from Tangled, any Disney princess ever, Mary Jane from Spider-Man. I'm a meh on this trope. Like, I don't love it, but I think there are some very clever subversions of this trope, such as like Princess Leia or Princess Fiona, who like are damsels, but like they're very like funny, you know, like quick-witted or like stronger than the people rescuing them, which is really cool.
I love Princess Fiona.
Shout out to Princess Fiona.
Yeah, I think, okay, for me, this trope is so funny because, like, I'm not someone who likes to rely on other people, but the thought that someone could just scoop me up and take me out of this mess, the mess being, like, a ton of schoolwork I don't want to do, like, that is nice. Do you know what I mean?
It would be nice. I would love for that to happen.
I'm not saying it needs to be, like, a man in armor and whatever, but it's, like, someone to put me out of this misery would be real nice now and again. So I feel like this is an easy genre for people to get into.
Yeah, I like the concept's cute. It just heavily depends on the execution for me.
Yeah, it's like there's, I don't know, there like you have to take it with a feminist perspective for it to really work.
Yes.
So yeah, but I don't know. I think it could, it's one that needs to be developed on. It could work. It could also land really flat. So something that needs development when you're writing with it.
Yeah, of course. On to our next one. I have empowering makeovers. I see this trope a lot in romantic adjacent things, but essentially a character, typically an unconventionally attractive girl, is given a makeover to seem more desirable for men. So like she's given a new wardrobe, makeup, sometimes her entire personality changes. A good example of this would be Ty from Clueless, how she went from like the very like street style baggy clothes to like, you know, wearing what Cher would wear. I mean, I love Clueless with my entire heart, but like I hate this trope. I think it just, I feel like it's just a very, like, very sexist and mean archetype to push onto girls. And, like, to me, like, the girls are just always so much prettier pre-makeover. You know, like, why force them into something that's not for them?
Right. I think it's just, you know, something they do in the movies. Like, it's just one of those movie things you see. And I think there's a way it can be done well. But I think for the most part, it's overdone.
Yeah,
it's just way overdone because there's something to be said for like helping someone feel more confident about themselves, but and there's something, it's different when it's like, oh, you need to
need to change yourself for this dude.
Yeah, like I think it's fine if you're gonna go out and get a new dress and do your makeup because you want to be confident at the school dance, but when it's like, oh, you're ugly, let's fix that. Okay. We need to give it a rest. Maybe in another 20 years, we could bring this back and try and put a better spin on it. Indeed. But for now, RIP empowering makeovers.
Oh, yes. Do you want to take the next one?
Sure. So this next one is popular plus unpopular. This is a fun trope. It's kind of like the jock falling for the nerd or, you know, however you want to do it. Ella has down very fish out of water vibes. I don't know what that means, but like, I read it out loud anyway.
Like, you know,
like somebody out of their element.
Yeah.
Kinda. Okay. Yeah. This is, I don't know. I think this trope could be very cute.
I think it's cute too. Yeah. I think it's like coming from like, from me being like an unpopular nerdy slash like weird girl. I would always like watch this and be like, the jock can fall for me. And then like it never happened in real life, but like that's okay. But like I don't know, it just like, I just remember like watching or like reading, this is like literally me.
That is very cute.
I feel like some of the other ones, like, this is very much, like, an entry point into, like, the long, expansive list.
You know, Ella, I totally just realized this seems like this, it was your entryway,
right? It probably was, yeah, because I was, like, living it real life in my mind.
Right, and then my entryway was stocking and age gaps. So that tells you duality. A little difference. Yeah, that shows like some difference between Ella and I's opinion is kind of our background on it.
I'm very tame, I guess. Like thinking back on that year, like I had to like all these like gross, grody things. I'm just like, the nerd and the jock, kicking my feet.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's just about the media that you consume too soon. But yeah, I think unpopular and popular. I mean, it's a cute combo.
It is cute. I feel like it's also something you might need to pair with something else. Like,
right, yeah.
An unpopular and popular plus, like, a love triangle.
That's some good drama.
That's interesting.
Yeah, on the edge of my seat right now.
Yeah, biting my fingernails. Get me a bucket of popcorn. But now for our final one. Do you want me to take it or you?
You go ahead.
All right. So our last one is unrequited love. So, like, that's when you love someone and they don't love you back. So, like...
Wah-wah. No, that was way. Not planned. Okay.
Hey, you owe me a soda. But I think a really good example of this would be Her with Joaquin Phoenix, and he's like in love with the robot or whatever. I'm a meh on this. Sometimes I think it's pretty tragic, and other times I just find it a little annoying. So I'm just like, ugh. Like, fall in love already, you two. like I'm, like, playing with my Barbies and, like, throwing them together. Like, yeah. Fall in love! Because, like, I do love my angst, but I also want them to, like, win and succeed in the end. Because I'm an optimist and a romantic at heart.
That is so cute, Ella.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a... What's the opposite of an optimist? A pessimist.
A pessimist.
I'm a pessimist and an anti-romantic at heart.
Isabel, so. I don't think that's true.
No, I don't think I'm an anti-romantic, but I do think I'm probably a pessimist. However, I think this trope is okay as long as it's done quickly. I mean, we need to wrap it up here with this one, because I think... Well, no, go ahead.
No, that reminds me of another one we could talk about after this.
Oh, okay. But I don't know. I feel like it happens too long. I'm bored. I'm done. It's, like, not that interesting. There's only so much whining you can do in a book or movie where you're like, oh, they don't like me.
That made me laugh because, like, I like slow burn.
Oh, slow. Okay. Slow burn is another sort of
trope, I guess,
you could fall into. It kind of fits well with unrequited love, like we're talking about. And it's just when the romance takes really, really long.
Like, the development is very slow. They take their time with it.
They're, like, strangers for, like, 3, 4, maybe 10 chapters in a book. And then, like, you know, maybe halfway through they finally meet. Like,
I don't know. I feel like I like it because, like, you know the payoff is going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, the big reveal. But...
Yeah, I think this one could be done well. I don't mind a slow burn, but it can't be that slow. If it's too
there's
slow,
there's a,
like,
limit.
If it's like a series of books and I read the first book and there's like more books I have to read, no.
Right. Yeah, I feel like sometimes writers use slow burn just to like kind of stall until like certain plot points pop up and like you can tell.
Get to the gossip.
It gets a little lazy sometimes.
Right.
Let's see. Anything else you can think of? Because, like, I can't believe I totally forgot to add slow burn.
No, I'm kind of good. I do want to say, I feel like I added myself too much in this podcast. And I don't really do a lot of romantic reading, watching, consuming of media. So I just want to put that out there. At the end of this. Just cover myself for a minute there.
I don't know. I don't do a lot of reading. I'll do, like, a lot of watching, I guess, because I'm a cinephile. What can I say? I just think a lot of how I know a lot of the stuff is just because I'm very chronically online.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like it's kind of hard to escape some of these tropes, especially with online media. But, yeah. Live, laugh, love.
Yeah, I think that does it. Thank you so much for listening.
Yippee. Thank you, guys.